And our next case this morning is De Tomaso v. Holder, case number 091860. Mr. Pachulski.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court. My name is Don Pachulski, and I represent the De Tomaso family. This family is citizens from Italy who entered under the Visa Waiver Program on April 16th of 1998. Mr. De Tomaso had a labor certification that was filed on his behalf on April 6, 1999 by his then employer. This position was a bona fide.
What was the date of that?
Pardon me?
What was the date?
It was April 6th of 1999.
Okay.
It's a critical date because it's before the April 30, 2001 date, which, in my opinion, establishes the prejudice which Bayo did not have.
Now, where is that? That doesn't seem to be anywhere in the record, though.
Yes, it was. It's the filing receipt was a part of the record, and I can get the exact point, but the application as well was part of the record as well. Just I can on rebuttal, I'll have those pages marked out. But it was always attached, and then we also filed a motion to reconsider, which attached that as well, because when the service initially denied this case, they said you didn't establish eligibility for adjustment status under 245I, which we clearly did several times by filing that receipt, the application, and evidence that this person was in the United States on December 20th of 2000. The Life Act modified 245I, and it allowed for adjustment of status for those people who had a bona fide job offer, and it was also for somebody who can establish they were in the United States on December 20th, 2000. We attached income tax returns, payroll records, W-2s to show that. So this was a bona fide and approvable labor certification. My position is that their grandfather, the Tomaso family, for adjustment of status, for 245I for adjustment of status, which then allows inadmissible aliens, someone who overstays a visa, somebody who entered without inspection, or somebody who entered under the visa waiver program who overstayed.
All they have to do is just apply sometime, and then that makes them eligible in perpetuity?
Yes, they're grandfathered in, and that's under the regular...
Even though they don't have the job, even though they didn't...
They had the job at that time.
Well,
so it had to be... It doesn't have to be the job that they're presently at. So that the regulations at 245.10A1 allows for what's called grandfathering. So this prior application that was filed prior to April 30, 2001... grandfathered the De Tomaso family for future cases. So the fact that it was a different employer, they were still eligible under the regulations to be grandfathered in as if it were a similar case that allowed for adjustment of status. It would be as if you filed a visa petition that was not current and available for processing. And I'll use the example, brothers and sisters of people from Mexico are probably backed up 12, 15 years, but if it was filed before that time, it would be grandfathered in. And I think that's the distinction, that's the prejudice that Bayo could not has established, is because the De Tomaso family were clearly eligible for adjustment status under 245I because of this prior filing, they were grandfathered in. The decision specifically stated that it was denied because they never established eligibility. And it was clearly in the record twice. When the application for adjustment status was first filed, and then there was a motion to reconsider that was filed as well, because the decision, in my opinion, didn't have to be current. If you see the regulations, when it says grandfather, it doesn't say it must be your current employer. It says it has to be an application that was bona fide and approvable when filed. And under the Life Act, these people had to then establish that they were in the United States on December 20th of 2000. Now, that being said...
If I could interrupt for a minute, to clarify exactly what we have before us as a jurisdictional matter, we've got just the motion for reconsideration, as I understand it.
In my opinion, this was not a final order of removal for two reasons, and that's because of the due process claim that he made under 245I. In the Bayo case, it says, to warrant a new immigration hearing on a due process claim, an alien must establish that he was prejudiced. The prejudice that we have here is that we were eligible for adjustment of status. Bayo had to file and adjust within that 90-day time frame. Under 245I, It no longer applied. 245I allows an inadmissible alien to adjust after that fact. Now, in the government's brief, they keep talking about that 90 days. If I file adjustment of status within that 90-day time period, I'm in legal and lawful status. And that was what Bayo didn't have. He had an adjustment filed subsequent to that and used a different section of the statute. The 245I, in my opinion, rendered this not a final order of removal. I also felt that due to the fact that he had 245I, that his visa waiver was not knowing or voluntary. When he came in the second time, his application was already filed. He was already 245I eligible, and he didn't waive that. That 245I under the regs always was an entitlement which he had by meeting those three requirements. He was in the United States on December 20th of 2000. It was approvable when filed and was a bona fide job offer. It doesn't have to be with the current employer. And that's where the prejudice comes in, because the Immigration Service denied the application for adjustment of status solely for that reason only. And it's evident that if 245 does apply in cases like this, that's the prejudice that Bayo did not have. We also have people from visa waiver countries. In the Bayo case, you had someone who entered on a phony passport. You had somebody that entered from a country who's not on the visa waiver program. So in the first sentence of that decision, he's not a very sympathetic litigant. I agree, because my clients entered legally and lawfully on their passports under the visa waiver program. They've established the prejudice, in my opinion, which is necessary in these cases for us to proceed, and that's the 245I. I filed the habeas because I did not believe that there was a final order of removability due to those two reasons. There was a due process argument for the 245I argument, and I also believe there's a due process argument for the knowing, whether it was knowing and voluntary. I also filed the motion to reconsider, because it seems to me, you know, as counsel, I have to look at something and say, what's the most economical way for my client to get resolved to this issue? When I saw a decision that in black and white said you are not eligible, you did not file prior to April 30, 2001, it was very easy for me to just say, oh, yes, I did. Here's the receipt. Here's the application. Here's W-2s and tax returns evidencing all the requirements necessary for 245I to apply. Rather than filing a petition for review, I felt that it would be easier for me to file the motion to reconsider. But it all boils down to, were they denied a due process in their adjustment of status? And I believe the answer is clearly yes. And, you know, the Bayo case, in my opinion, the first decision was a little nicer, but, you know, the second decision still it helps us, because we did have the prejudice, which I believe is the critical point in the Bayo case. And having established a prejudice, I believe they should be entitled to that second hearing. Any applicant for adjustment status under 245I should be entitled to them the same treatment as other individuals. Had these people been in removal proceedings rather than a determination of removability under 217, I would have had the opportunity to reapply for adjustment status in front of an immigration judge in removal proceedings. I think that's a due process violation as well, because I don't believe if they're eligible for 245I under adjustment of status.
You're eating up your rebuttal time.
I'm sorry. Then they should be able to get the same treatment as everybody else.
Thank you. Ms. Williams.
May it please the Court, my name is Lindsay Williams, and I represent the respondent in this matter. I'm going to start with jurisdiction, because we always start with jurisdiction. In this case, we have a final order of removal, and the final order of removal is the notice of removability that was issued by DHS, by ICE in particular, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and that was issued on January 29th, 2009. That is the notice that informed the petitioners that they were not native or citizens of the United States, and that they had overstayed their authorized stay under the visa waiver program, and that they were removable under INA Section 217 and INA Section 237. Therefore, 30 days from January 29th, 2009 was when they needed to file the petition for review with this court. That would have been February 28th, 2009. They did not file their petition for review until March 16th, 2009. Respondent's position is that under the INA, they have failed to timely file their petition for review. Therefore, the court doesn't have jurisdiction to consider the petition for review. Petitioner's claim that somehow his application for adjustment of status before CIS is without merit. It's a completely different procedure. It is under a completely different section of the regulations. It has nothing to do with the determination that he is removable, and it has nothing to do with this court's jurisdiction because CIS did not issue a final order of removability.
We do have a timely filed petition from the denial of the motion to reconsider, though.
The denial of the motion to reconsider.
Or, I'm sorry, the motion to reopen or reconsider.
Before?
At the notice of removal, or I'm sorry, the order of removal. There was a timely petition taken from that.
I'm sorry, it. Then I must be confused. Give me the date on that. I'm sorry.
I don't have
because
the
he did file. I'm sorry, I'm going to. Well, I'll get my brief in just a second. But he did file a motion to reopen with CIS for the application for adjustment of status, but not a motion to reopen for.
There is no motion to reopen the order of removal.
Right. It's a motion to reconsider the denial of the adjustment application, which is when he resubmitted what he claims is the proper certification for his earlier labor certification, which he alleges made him eligible under 245I. So if you look at, in the record, I believe it's page 16 and 17, that's where you see the decision to deny the motion to reopen or reconsider. That is addressed to you'll see at the top, it's U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. That's who deals with his application for adjustment of status, not his notice of removability. And since I'm on this, I would like to also say that, and this is something he has not addressed, I'm going to refer to them as USIS because it's easier. USIS, who denied the application for adjustment of status in the motion, in the decision on the motion to reconsider, recognized the fact that he did have an earlier filed labor certification. But what they said is, you have filed an earlier labor certification, which possibly could qualify you, but the problem is that you didn't file it pursuant to the regulations of the Secretary of Labor. There are regulations that pertain to these labor certifications, and they are cited to them in my brief, and I can give them to you. But basically, you're required to submit a proof that you have properly filed your labor certification both with the state, Illinois, and with the federal Department of Labor. And he failed to provide any proof that he had properly filed it with the federal Department of Labor. So we can skip over all of the argument with whether 245I provides an exception to the visa waiver program waiver because he wasn't eligible for 245I because he didn't meet the basic requirements. He didn't have proof that he had properly filed his labor certification.
So you're saying that whatever his argument is as far as the 245I, it was incomplete because
That's right.
It was not whatever certified or approved or whatever by the Department of Labor. That's a condition preceding before it becomes a valid precedent?
Yes.
So there was no basis to reopen or reconsider the adjustment application or the adjustment decision.
That's correct. So to walk you through it, because it is complicated, as you can see from all my papers right here, we've got the notice of removability, which was issued by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That has to do with his removability. Then we've got the application for adjustment that was filed with CIS, which he filed.
What are you saying? What is it, the acronym? CIS. CIS,
Citizenship and Immigration Services.
Oh, okay.
So CIS denied his adjustment application twice. First, because they said you didn't have a labor certification filed during the correct time period. So then he filed a motion to reopen, reconsider, submitted the earlier filed labor certification, and then they said, well, okay, yes, You did file it earlier, but you didn't prove to us that you properly filed it per the regulations with the Federal Department of Labor. So respondent's position is that the court lacks jurisdiction to consider the petition for review because he didn't file within 30 days of the notice of removability, which was issued on January 29, 2009. And then with respect to his whole argument about how 245I provides an exception to the visa waiver provision, it's really irrelevant because he wasn't eligible for 245I regardless. Even if the court were to find that he was eligible, that somehow his eligibility makes it worth the court's time looking at whether or not 245I is an exception to the visa waiver provision, respondent would just point the court to all of the cases that deal with, for instance, Bayo. In all of those cases, you had petitioners who had come in under the visa waiver program. They had waived the right to contest their removability, and then they had filed adjustment of status applications. They had filed adjustment of status applications based upon I-130 visa petitions, which are immediate relative visa petitions. That's different from what Mr. DiTomaso did. He filed an I-140 labor petition, so based upon his employer. 245C4 provides a very explicit exception that says if you are a visa waiver program participant, you may not adjust your status under 245A unless it's an immediate relative visa petition. Okay, so that's what Bayo relied upon. And this court held that 217, INA 217, which is the visa waiver program provision, which says you waive your right to contest your removability, read in conjunction with 245C4, which says you can apply for adjustment of status if you are a visa waiver program participant, if you have an immediate relative visa petition, read those two things together to say, okay, yeah, you can apply for adjustment of status if you do it within the 90-day window that you're granted under the visa waiver program. If you try to apply after that 90 days, no deal, you can't do it. So Mr. DiTomaso is relying upon 245I, which provides another exception. 245I says, never mind 245A and never mind 245C, here's another way you can get adjustment of status. You can get adjustment of status if, and listing all of the requirements. But if this court goes back and looks at its reasoning in Bayo and other circuits' reasoning in Momeni and Lacey and Lang, all of the cases that respondent cites in his brief, the reasoning is the same and the result is the same. If you read INA 217 in conjunction with 245I, the result is yes, you can apply to adjust your status, but it has to be within the 90 days because once you're out of the 90 days, you're removable. And under INA 217, you cannot contest your removability. So, to sum it all up, because it gets kind of confusing and my time is up, almost up, we think this is a very easy case for the court. The court lacks jurisdiction. He didn't timely petition. And regardless, 245I, he's not eligible for it. If there are no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Pachowski, anything further?
I have a major disagreement with counsel because the priority date is established by my filing with the Illinois Department of Alien Certifications. There is not a subsequent filing with the U.S. Department of Labor. So when you review your regulations, the case is timely filed and it's accepted when it's filed with the Illinois Department of Employment Security, because they who administer the procedural process for this labor certification process, that there is no separate filing with the Illinois Department of, with the Federal Department of Labor. So my priority date is not established by my initial filing with the Illinois Department of Employment Security Alien Certification Unit. There is no separate filing that then goes to the Federal Department of Labor, and because I did not file something with the Federal Department of Labor, I lose 245I. It's not true. It isn't the case. And when you review the regulations, you'll see my priority date for 245I is established when I filed my case with the Illinois Department of Employment Security. They administer the recruitment process, which is then sent to the U.S. Department of Labor. It's the same filing date.
I don't understand the question to be one of timing or the issue to be one of timing, but substance, that there was no proof that the Department of Labor was notified?
Proof would be pages 6 through 8 with the filing stamps on the Illinois Department of Employment Security, because that's the priority date for purpose of the case. There is no federal filing for labor certification.
Deny that there's a requirement.
Yes, absolutely.
Of notification to the Department of Labor.
Right. I'm saying that once I filed with the Illinois Department of Employment Security, that established my 245I. Yes, I did file a motion to reconsider, and that was filed April 5th of 09, and I filed it seeking that the adjustment was improperly denied. And I think if they would have granted that, they would have rescinded the determination of removability. So I think when you look at the total motion and together, it did address both. I have nothing further, Judge.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.